This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
This is CNN Breaking News.
Welcome to The Lead. I'm Phil Mattingly in for Jake Tapper today, and we are live outside the New York courthouse, where today one of Donald Trump's most loyal aides and the first former Trump White House employee to testify took the stand in the hush money cover-up trial. Hope Hicks acknowledged to the jury she was nervous to testify at times. She giggled in one instance, actually cried on the stand, leading to a brief delay in the trial. Now, Hicks described starting to work for the Trump Organization in 2014 before becoming the Trump campaign spokeswoman in the 2016 race, and ultimately the White House communications director. Now, she testified about the campaign's panic behind the scenes when they learned of the now infamous Access Hollywood tape, that Donald Trump was upset when he heard the news, and staffers agreed that, quote, this was a crisis. Hicks went on to testify that she only learned about Karen McDougal, who alleged a nearly year-long affair with Donald Trump, when contacted by the Wall Street Journal just 4 days before the 2016 election. I want to dive right in with CNN Chief Legal Affairs Correspondent Paul Reed and Manhattan criminal defense attorney Stacey Schneider. Paul, I want to start with you, because this was a significant day. Everyone was waiting for Hope Hicks to testify, see where she was going to go with things, given her proximity to the former president. But the atmosphere, I think, was also critical in this moment. Hope Hicks said from the top, I'm very nervous. She cried at one point. What was going on?
It built to a crescendo because at the end of her direct examination from prosecutors, she testified that Trump told her he was aware of the payment, that Cohen had made it to keep Stormy Daniels quiet. Because remember, at the heart of this is allegations that he falsified business records that appeared to be a retainer for Cohen. But this suggests that Trump is aware that Cohen paid Daniels and knew it wasn't for legal services, that it was indeed hush money. And he also told her that he knew that suppressing that story was a good thing ahead of the election, and he was glad that it got out after the election. And that's all very powerful for the prosecutor's case. And it was a few moments after she said that, while they were switching to defense lawyers, that she broke down on the stand. One of her colleagues inside said it was as if she realized that she had just provided something really damaging against her former boss. Now, I will say, once defense attorneys got a crack at her, she also provided some helpful testimony to them, most notably that Trump was concerned about the impact that the Karen McDougal story would have on his wife, and that's really a large part of the defense. So definitely the most emotional day that we've seen on the stand so far.
And to that point, the build from the prosecution kind of laying out the entire timeline over the course of several hours, and it was at the very end that we got those kind of critical moments from Hope Hicks, Apollo was just detailing. What do you think the jury's takeaway from today should be?
Today was like a blockbuster of testimony from Hope Hicks. It was unbelievable. There were so many points scored for the prosecution's case, which is this build-up and background of the story leading up to the election and why, allegedly, Michael Cohen's payment to Stormy Daniels was in aid of the campaign, as the prosecution has gotten previous witnesses to testify to. But was also what was happening here, in which the jury was taking in, was that every time Hope Hicks described Michael Cohen, it was what was with distaste. And there's this theme coming out from the defense, from Trump's team, that Michael Cohen might have gone rogue on this, and they're going to try to prove it. So by Stormy Daniels saying he was inserting himself in the campaign, he wasn't really part of it, but he was Hope Hicks, thank you. We're expecting
a lot of different players.
Stormy Daniels is coming. There are a lot of little tidbits that Hope Hicks tossed to the defense, even though she's the prosecution witness. But when Paul was describing her crying, I think it's so significant because of the fact that the defense isn't calling her as a witness, and she and Trump had a very long-term, excellent relationship. He was very fond of her. They fell out in 2022. And for her to be crying on the stand, I know what that feels like, because he's scary, and she knew that she had kind of stepped into it and said something that was not going to help him when she revealed that he was aware of the payments to Stormy Daniels, even though that was after the election. It shows knowledge and intent. And we are not expecting, we meaning the attorneys who try these cases all the time, no way, I don't care what Donald Trump says, I don't think he's going to take that stand. It would be way too dangerous.
To what you were saying, that there were points that Hope Hicks had during the cross that were effective. You know, it's such a good background on Hope Hicks, because she's not one of those people who totally turn on Donald Trump, right? She hasn't had books, she hasn't been on cable TV, she hasn't gone completely against him. There's no sense of that. She hasn't said much publicly at all. And there were points during the cross-examination where I think the defense got what they wanted out of her. It was very short.
Yeah, absolutely. Even on direct, she had very warm comments, even though they've been estranged since the January 6th investigation. There were very warm comments that she had about his gift for messaging, his work ethic. She's clearly not someone who is hostile to the defendant. And so that makes it more powerful, anything that they can get out of her. And on defense, on the cross-examination, not only did she talk about how concerned Trump legitimately was about the impact this could have on his family, she also talked again about Michael Cohen. As I keep saying, no one has anything nice to say about Michael Cohen. It's the one thing that unites both sides of this case, is no matter who is doing the questioning, something negative about Michael Cohen always comes out. And here she was talking about how he was the fixer, but it's because he's usually broken things.
And
not
I
a
love,
very charitable comment.
And then she started laughing, and I laughed too when I read it.
It's funny.
Totally. I love when she said Michael Cohen doesn't have like a decent or nice bone in his body. But, you know, it's something like that. Everyone is just so against Michael Cohen. But the big takeaway from Hope Hicks' testimony is Michael Cohen, no matter how hard Trump's defense is trying to distance Michael Cohen from campaign activity, he's still calling Hope Hicks all the time and saying, I've got this intel on Stormy Daniels. I've got a negative statement on Stormy Daniels retracting the story. So campaign, don't worry, because I've got it covered. So, you know, whether he was in the campaign or out of the campaign or acting as Trump's attorney, it's all Trump's world is all connected. The campaign, his private life, Michael Cohen. And even though, you know, we were talking about just now and throughout the broadcast today, how the defense scored this victory because they were able to get Hope Hicks to say, Trump was really worried about Melania. Well, why wouldn't he be? It's an allegation about an affair. It's disruptive. But that doesn't take away the motive and the intent and the concern Trump would very likely have on his campaign. And bringing in the whole trial is about bringing all of these witnesses in to show Trump's motive and intent allegedly was to benefit his campaign. His family may have been a motive, but it's likely secondary considering all the machinations we've seen so far, and we're not even halfway through the trial.
Right, and still pushing towards that moment where they're directly connected to the former president, which is clearly something they've been trying to do. All right, guys, stay with me. I do want to bring in CNN political commentator Alyssa Farah Griffin. She was the White House Communications Director under former President Trump. And I'm not sure you can find a lot of people who have kind of a more analogous path than Hope Hicks than you, Alyssa, on some level, including the idea that you've testified in front of different panels related to the former president. You've held the role, you've been in the rooms as you guys have been trying to figure out how to respond to crises, not these ones specifically. But I'm interested, you worked in the same White House at the same time in 2020. What was your read on how Hope Hicks was today?
So listen, I thought it was a mixed bag, and I expected that. I said as much in advance. Hope Hicks is not me. I was never expecting I was going to welcome her to the Trump resistance after this testimony. Her testimony was never going to be Cassidy Hutchinson going in front of the January 6th committee. She's somebody who was loyal to Trump to the very end. She never spoke out about January 6th. She just kind of quietly went into the night. We learned that I guess they haven't been in communication in some time. But I think what she did, she's a very shrewd person. She's calculated in how she operates. She was there under subpoena, and she said exactly what she needed to say to not perjure herself, to not incriminate herself. but nothing more than that. So, yes, there were some wins for the prosecution, obviously acknowledging or being able to state that Trump acknowledged the payment that Michael Cohen made. That was a big win. But there were also some key wins for the defense. And I have to think that's by design. She has such genuine affection for Donald Trump, for his family. She was almost like an extended member of his family. So I think this explanation about he wanted to make his family proud, he didn't want Melania Trump to see the newspapers, I think that's going to resonate with the jury. And I just want to share one thing. Stephanie Grisham, who was sort of what Hope Hicks was to Trump, to Melania Trump, pointed out that Melania Trump consumed all of her news. She's a voracious reader on social media and online, not through print newspapers. So that wouldn't have really helped her from learning about this just as a factual matter. But I think it was an incredibly mixed bag. If that was the key star witness, you know, I don't know that I think it's a rock solid case in many ways.
Can I ask you, you make a really important distinction about kind of your path post White House and Hope Hicks's path, which I think people need to understand. And when you think about that, what do you think it was like for Hope Hicks to be in a courtroom 10 feet away from the former president in front of a jury in a high stakes case like this?
Yeah, I couldn't help but think about that because she had such a close relationship to Donald Trump. I think this was truly emotional for her. I mean, this is someone unlike other senior staff like myself. She would go and have dinner at Ivanka and Jared's house. She was close with the family, like truly a friend of the family. So I think for her, this was a lot more. She felt like she was having to testify against somebody that she cared about. For someone like me and others who spoke out just about his unfitness for office, trying to overturn the election, the events around January 6th, it was frankly a lot less emotional. It was truly just, this is what's right for the country. It's the obligation we felt we had as public servants who collected a taxpayer salary. This is a very different individual with that regard. That said, she's credible. She's in the room. I think she shared some incredibly useful information and did, if anything, made clear that Donald Trump was aware of this payment that Michael Cohen made on his behalf.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And I think you know quite well that he was involved in everything when it came to statements and the like, despite what may have been presented otherwise. Well, Lucifer Griffin, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, a dramatic day for sure at the Trump hush money cover-up trial. What it was like to be inside the courtroom today as one of Trump's most loyal advisors spent hours on the stand. Our Laura Coates, she was just out from the court. She's going to join me next. Stay with us.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number smart beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number smart beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
We're back outside the courthouse where Donald Trump's hush money trial just wrapped up for the week. Seen as Laura Coates joins me now. And Laura, you were inside the courtroom on what was unquestionably a fascinating day. I think Anderson said when Hope Hicks walked in, it was like there was an electricity to the room, given her relationship with the former president. Walk people through what you saw. What stood out to you?
Oh, well, that current continued. I mean, the idea that we were all waiting to hear from somebody who's going to be the connection between the campaign. Remember, the whole purpose of the prosecution's argument is that this was all done to try to benefit the campaign. Well, she is that link to get us from the stories of catch and kill to now what happened. What was striking to watch the former president walk into the courtroom, you're talking about somebody who you're so accustomed to being in these opulent settings, by design and intentionally. Here he is, an ordinary defendant in a criminal courtroom, where a judge walks into the courtroom and just says, is the next witness ready? Where jurors are filing in, walking behind him, where you would normally have a buffer zone that's quite extensive, Secret Service. Now you've got different court personnel who are lining the hallway, lining the actual aisle. But in all respects, it showed you just how this is an actual criminal proceeding in this level. What was also striking to me was how emotional Hope Hicks became. It was a moment that I think people were not expecting to see at all.
I don't want to interrupt, but explain it to me, because there's no cameras in the courtroom.
Right.
We're reading our sensational reporters who are giving us live feeds of everything that's being spoken. You were involved in that today, too. We appreciate it. But it didn't seem like there was anything that drove that moment. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, they're taking a break. She's crying on the stand. What happened?
So there were two moments you can point at. So when she was done doing the direct examination, she'd been talking. Her body was turned towards the jury most of the time, away from the former president of the United States. She was answering her questions towards the jury. And then the direct examination ended, where the prosecution ended on a discussion about, you know, a point whether she believed that the campaign would have been impacted by the publication of these articles or of these stories. And she acknowledged that, in fact, was the case. And then there was a moment when, you know, Amel Bovee, the attorney for Donald Trump, came up and took to the lectern. And when he got up, he had an ordinary question, Phil, essentially talking about, you know, wanting to direct her to a next moment in time. And then her body kind of turned and she gulped for a second. She kind of closed into herself momentarily and her head began to bow. And then she turned for a second away to lift her hair back and turned her face away. At which point it was apparent that she was becoming emotional. And you could tell that the attorney for Trump was a little befuddled in that moment as to what he had done. His hands kind of raised for a moment. He looked ever so briefly towards the counsel table to see if there's a moment that triggered it. And then to the jury quickly to figure out how they were receiving this. Because no lawyer wants to get up there and have somebody who's already soft-spoken, told you she's nervous when she walked into the room, somebody who had a slight figure in terms of being not a big presence in the courtroom, was not a charismatic or overly verbose person, but that now whatever he had said made the jury thinking, what happened here? And so then he turned and said, well, do you need a moment? And at first she, I think, questioned and paused, then looked back and said, yes, I do. And then turned her head completely away as if to shield her face from being visible of crying. Now, right behind her, there's a bailiff. And there are tissues, there's water, and she is turning her body away as if, self-conscious of what was happening. Then they got up. As she walks around, she is having to pass by the former president of the United States, somebody who was like a family member to her, to Ivanka. And Donald Trump, the former president, looks up towards her. And I could see his face very clearly. He looked a bit concerned in the moment, not as if concerned that something she had said had hurt his case, but that he was concerned. His eyebrows were to parse different ways to look at her face. And she covered her face in almost her hair and then slinked around him as if to shrink herself. It was a moment that you hadn't seen and was not expecting. And then he stood sort of stoically or sat there looking at straight ahead. Both his attorneys were on either side of his body. Todd Blanche, Amel Bovee, Miss Nichols was down, a lawyer down the table. She had not spoken to him, but they were both trying to speak in his ear. He kept looking straight ahead of him as if in that moment the weight was there. Now, in thinking about what would have triggered that, it could have been either she was overwhelmed by the entirety of this. I mean, you're talking about someone who said she's not spoken to him since 2022 after having been so close to him and his family. And then there was that moment when she's acknowledging that this was an issue for the campaign. But there was a lot of testimony that came in about how he was concerned about Melania Trump. He respected his wife. He asked for newspapers not to be delivered to the residents when there was unfavorable headlines that may have impacted her perception of him. She talked about all those things, but in that moment, I think that she was sincerely overwhelmed by where she was in that moment.
This is far and away the closest advisor that the former president has had on the stand.
Yes.
Right? He clearly had a friendship that went back decades with David Pecker, didn't have a close relationship at all with some of the other individuals that have testified. Should with the C-SPAN guy. I think everybody should want to be friends with the C-SPAN guy. What was his reaction throughout the course of the testimony?
You know, he was pretty stoic, in fact, of looking straight ahead. I kept leaning and cranking my neck to see every time there was a moment how he was receiving it. When the first lady formally had been mentioned, what he said about what he looked at about it. It seemed to me unlike the demeanor we're hearing about when, say, David Pecker, who was, you know, someone he knew for decades. Yeah. You know, I mean, he wasn't like somebody who knew everything about him, although he certainly had a relationship with him. It seemed like a very different scenario. And I couldn't help but wonder, given that that Hope Hicks had first come into the family operation through his own daughter, Ivanka. They're not that far apart in age, frankly, you know, Ivanka and Hope Hicks, although Hope Hicks is younger. And I couldn't help but think about the fact that she was being brought in part as a kind of character witness, in the way that Rona had been, the right-hand woman of Donald Trump. Yeah. They both talked about him being, you know, having their trust and respect. They both talked about their relationship, the excitement, and what she called chaos, but a good chaos at times. But then there was this moment, Phil, when she described the Access Hollywood tape and the fallout as a crisis. It, she wasn't mincing words. She wasn't trying to hedge and suggest, I mean, was it a thing? I mean, I guess it was. She knew that it was. They talked through the Republican response to what was happening. At that time, he was leaning in, I understand, as well on those issues. But I was looking to the jury. I wanted to see how the jury was receiving her, because in the end, that's all that matters for the prosecution. And I noticed that when they were taking notes in her testimony, at first, before she was crying and emotional, they were looking towards the person asking the question, the prosecution. He looked back at her almost like a tennis match. But then after the moment she began to cry, they were leaned in to understand, I think, in part, what had happened, but also what was going to happen next. Was she going to be triggered somehow again? Did her testimony offend Trump in some ways? Did it help the prosecution? And I think that was the moment you realized how much of an important witness this was. For the same reason you were leaning in, waiting for Hope Hicks or someone with a connection to come in, so was the jury. And I'll end you with this, because this is how Emile Beauvais ended. He said, so after all going through her resume and working for the White House, et cetera, he asked her, but in all this, you had no idea what was going on back at, you know, Trump headquarters and documents, right, and business records. And she says, no, I did not. Which, remember, that's why we're here. We're not here just to talk about whether he respected his wife or her opinion. We're not here to talk about, you know, whether or not Mitch McConnell or Senator John McCain criticized Trump. We were here because it's a falsified business records case. And so as important of a witness as she was to connect the dots, the area where the prosecution must prove their case about falsified records, well, that's a missing jigsaw piece that we will look forward to hearing in the days to come.
Yeah, clearly all driving to trying to present that
piece.
Oh,
yes.
But, you know, you could be my pool reporter and court
any day. But there's actually a pool, right?
Yes, there is. And you weren't that. But I just wanted to make it.
No, I mean like a swimming pool. I wanted to have, I'm a very visual person.
Thanks, Blake, for coming out. We appreciate it, as always. Laura Coates is in the courtroom today. Also today, Hope Hicks testifying about first learning about that infamous Access Hollywood tape. It was when a reporter emailed her asking for comment. That reporter, who went on to publish that bombshell, is going to join me next. Stay with us. Welcome back. Today in Trump's hush money trial, the prosecution questioned Hope Hicks about her role as Trump's press secretary during the 2016 campaign, particularly during the release of the Access Hollywood tape, where Trump was recorded in a 2005 conversation with NBC's Billy Bush saying this.
Hey, when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the I can do anything.
David Fahrenthold was the Washington Post reporter who first got a copy of the tape and broke that momentous bombshell of the story in 2016. He's now an investigative reporter at the New York Times. David, I just have to ask, we're talking about this during the break a little bit. I'm fascinated. How surreal was this? First criminal trial of a former president, the current presumptive Republican nominee, and you're at the heart of a full day here.
It was really surreal. I mean, as a reporter, you never really get a chance to see something like this from the other side, from the side of the people who were answering your questions. So it was fascinating for me to see all the reactions and the different sort of responses they went through after that question I sent in. I only saw the sort of prepared responses that came back. Today, I could see the rest of the story.
What surprised you when you got that fuller picture?
One thing, I guess two things. One was, you know, the first response that we got from the Trump campaign from Hope Hicks that day was, you know, we had sent them a transcript of what Trump said in that video. And she said, that doesn't sound like Mr. Trump. And I always thought, really? Like, that doesn't sound like Trump to you? It sounds like him to me. And I've been hearing him talk, and, like, you know, I just hear him in the speeches. But she got that response from Trump himself, we now learn. Trump said to her, that doesn't sound like something I would say. So then we sent them a the video itself, and then they confirmed that it was real. Also was struck by her initial response that one of the options was just deny, deny, deny. You know, before they even tried to figure out whether this tape was real, if it was really Trump on it, she was in sort of denial mode. And that was the way that that campaign worked. And in fairness, a lot of other campaigns work.
Yeah, I guess what was different about that campaign in dealing with you? You make a good point in the sense of, look, campaign press people aren't there to help you most times, particularly when you have the types of stories. I remember the stories you were doing about charitable giving. You had a full range of investigative pieces that you guys got into battles over. What was different about the battles you had with them versus other campaigns you've covered?
Usually campaigns will try to sort of overwhelm you. They'll call you up and yell at you, tell you 500 reasons why you're wrong, or the things that you're focusing on are not the right things. The Trump campaign sort of had two modes. One was just silence. You'd send them a bunch of detailed questions about something you were writing about, and they would tell you nothing. The second was falsehood. You'd send them a bunch of questions, they would call back and tell you something that was 100% wrong. Famously, one example in my reporting about Trump's charitable giving, I was told by the Trump campaign in no uncertain terms that Trump had given away $1 million to veterans that it turned out later he had given $0 of. So those are the two sort of modes, either lying or not responding at all. This was a really rare example, the Access Hollywood Day, when they finally responded truthfully and said, yes, this was him.
Yeah, slight accounting error when it came to the charitable giving. Real quick before I let you go, we only got about 10 seconds left. To see your emails in this type of forum and format, what do you think?
Well, I'm glad I spelled everything right, and I'm glad I was polite. You never know who's going to read your emails or where. So in this case, I was glad I had the right tone and asked the right things in that email.
Yeah, it was a good reminder to all of us who send emails. Be like David. David Farenthold, we really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And today it was Hope Hicks. What star witnesses might take the stand next week? We're going to talk about that next. Stay with us.
The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish.
Okay, by now you have probably heard that rappers Kendrick Lamar and Drake went after each other in a once-in-a-generation rap battle. By the time algorithms were done, the Kendrick-Drake beef had reached far beyond the walls of hip-hop. What can we learn from the first great rap battle of the streaming age? Listen to The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish, on your favorite podcast app.
We're back outside the federal courthouse in Manhattan with, you would call it a burning question. Is Donald Trump actually going to testify in his own defense? Well, that depends on what day you ask Donald Trump.
I would have no problem testifying. I didn't do anything wrong. I'm testifying. I tell the truth. I mean, all I can do is tell the truth. And the truth is that there's no case. They have no case. And
well, I would if it's necessary. Right now, I don't know if you heard about today. Today was just incredible. People are saying, the experts, I'm talking about legal scholars and experts, they're saying, what kind of a case is this? There is no case.
Well, I'm not allowed to testify. I'm under a gag order, I guess. I can't even testify.
Yeah, you want to stop me from testifying?
No, it won't stop me from testifying. The gag order is not for testifying.
And Judge Juan Merchan confirming today, as we all knew, the gag order does not stop Trump from testifying, nor does it limit what Trump can say on the stand. Our legal panel is here. We want to dig into all this. Paul, I want to start with you. What is your sense right now in terms of when you talk to his defense team, what they're thinking about as they've watched this play out? Is their client going to testify?
According to the sources I've spoken with, at the beginning of this trial, this is absolutely something that was on the table. They believe that their client was capable of getting on the stand and adding constructively to his defense. Now, I pointed out his conduct in the last few civil trials that here just blocks from here. I said, look, he didn't behave, didn't behave himself. He was rude at times, obnoxious, and that really hurt him when it came to the verdicts in those cases. And they said that he had learned some lessons there. But I think what we've seen is in his answers an evolution, making it seem less likely that he's inclined to do that. It could be because he sees the risks. It could also be because the defense is like, we don't need it. We're really doing well here with the witnesses that the prosecution has put on. I hope they do well with their own witnesses as well. So at this point, if I had to bet like $5, I wouldn't bet like big money. I don't think that he will take the stand.
All right, you've heard it. There's money on the table here. I want to bring Tom Dupree. Tom, Judge Merchan has yet to rule on the four additional alleged Trump gag order violations. After initially ruling, Trump violated it 9 times, $9,000. What's your sense of when we could see a ruling come down, and how much patience do you think the judge has here if these violations continue?
I think we're going to get a ruling on those other gag order issues early next week. I don't think the judge has a huge amount of patience for Trump and violations of the gag orders that happened in the past. That said, the latest batch of alleged gag order violations didn't seem to irk the judge quite as much as the first batch does. So although I would expect him to impose some sort of sanction, I don't think he's going to drop the hammer here. And as far as Trump testifying, I don't see it happening. If I were on the Trump defense team and he wanted to testify, I would tackle him before he made his way to the podium. It will not help the defense, and it will give the prosecutors a Pandora's box of issues to open and cross-examine Trump on.
All right, so we've got somebody putting $5 on it. Tom is saying he would physically intervene if this happened. Do you think the former president should testify on this? As a lawyer? Oh,
as a lawyer, no. My goodness. Defense lawyers never want defendants charged with crimes opening their mouth on the stand. It can go any way. It can be broadened. You say one thing, it's a trapdoor to something else. And who is the biggest mouth on the planet? Donald Trump. It would be the last thing. But the rule of law is that the client decides whether or not they testify and not the lawyer. So that's the one piece of strategy in a case that is only up to the defendant. So the lawyers decide what witnesses they're calling. They decide the order of the witnesses. They decide what testimony they want to elicit. But this is purely a decision in Trump's domain. And I want to add something, a very interesting observation about Donald Trump from today that came out of Hope Hicks, because I was on his television show, The Apprentice.
Right.
And I know how he operates when people talk out of line. And when Hope Hicks first took the stand, it was reported from inside the courtroom that he closed his eyes. And there's been a lot of reporting on that, oh, he's sleeping. How could he be sleeping while this is going on? And then yesterday, you remember, he social media posted that, I wasn't sleeping when my eyes are closed.
Beautiful blue eyes.
I'm taking it all in. I don't think he's taking it all in. I think he is coping. And I think he is self-soothing when he closes his eyes. It has nothing to do with sleep. I think he knew the moment that Hope Hicks was taking that stand that it was going to be heartache for him. It was going to be embarrassment for him. It was going to put together the three pieces of his life that are the theme of this trial: his business operations, his campaign operations, his White House operations, and then lastly, his personal interactions.
Right.
I don't think he had much care for any of the other witnesses, even though he said David Pecker, like you said earlier, is his friend of 20 years. He doesn't care about Michael Cohen. He cared about
Hope Hicks.
Yeah. Thank you. Keep wanting to call her Stormy Daniels for no reason at all.
To the point, though, because actually it brings me to the question I want to ask Tom. Tom, when you hope, Paul and I have talked about this often, how important Hope Hicks was just because of her role. We don't know who the prosecution will or could call on Monday. We know a whole lot of people who played very significant roles in this whole process that haven't testified yet. Who do you think is next?
Well, I don't know if he's next, but I can assure you we're going to hear from Michael Cohen at some point. I mean, he's the one who's going to have to connect all the dots here, Phil, because what the prosecutors have been doing is putting forward an arguably compelling circumstantial case. They're showing that Michael Cohen was working behind the scenes, busy as a beaver, trying to open LLCs and cut deals and that sort of thing. But what the prosecutors have yet to do is to directly connect Trump to what Cohen was doing. That's the missing link. They need to draw that line. I'm not sure how they're going to draw that line other than putting Michael Cohen on the stand. And when they do that, it's going to be Katie bar the door and cross-examination, because you know that is the moment that the Trump defense team has been waiting for all of these months.
Yeah, there's no question about that. What's your sense right now in terms of, does the prosecution feel like they need to do more, put more people up,
build more towards Cohen? Is he possibly on Monday?
So it's a fair question, and we expect Michael Cohen's testimony could take a full week, both the direct and cross. Now, we have a couple photos up there. I think it's less likely now that Kellyanne Conway would need to be called, because really the most important thing that she would contribute, we expect, you never know what you don't know, is the impact of the Access Hollywood tape on the campaign, and Hope Hicks really got at that. Also, Karen McDougal, again, her catch and kill deal is not at the center of this criminal case. It's unclear what additional value she would add. So I'm sure they might have some other summary witnesses, perhaps, as folks who get up, help introduce evidence. It's possible they could call some folks who worked at the Trump Organization. We know the defense lawyers will do that to bolster their argument that Trump really wasn't aware of what was going on with the invoices and this retainer. But it is possible that Cohen could go next week.
All right. Stacey, Tom, Paula, 2 weeks down, 2+ weeks down. Who knows how many more left? Appreciate it, guys. Well, today's testimony dredged up a lot about Trump's 2016 campaign. Will that impact the 2024 race? Our political insiders join us next. We're back outside the federal courthouse in Manhattan for Donald Trump's criminal hush money trial, where we heard some blockbuster testimony from one of Trump's closest aides about his conduct in the run-up to the 2016 election. So, big question politically, is this going to impact the 2024 election? Let's bring in some of our political voices. Kristen Holmes, I want to start with you. You cover the Trump campaign. You're with them every day. You're talking to them every day. Hope Hicks, very emotional today on the stand. She testified she last had contact with Trump in the summer or fall of 2022. It's almost 2 years ago. What do we know about kind of her role, how people inside the campaign view her now?
Well, people inside of the campaign still have a lot of respect for Hope Hicks. I mean, what we know about the reason that she hasn't spoken to Trump since 2022 is that all of this was around her testimony to the January 6th committee being made public. And in that, there was a series of text messages in which she really went after Donald Trump over January 6th. She went after talking about how this was going to harm his legacy, but also harm White House staffers who hadn't gotten jobs outside of the White House, essentially saying they weren't going to be able to find those jobs when they left the White House. And this really rankled a lot of people that were very close to Donald Trump. But I will say, speaking to people close to both Hicks and Trump, they still have a mutual admiration for each other. They still talk very highly of each other. And I think part of that was clear in the courtroom today, part of her getting emotional when she was talking about Donald Trump and specific events that happened, part of Donald Trump looking concerned, according to our reporters in the courtroom, when she started crying there. I don't think this is something that her campaign is necessarily worried about. I actually think that they more have a fondness for Hope Hicks.
You know, to that point, Shermichael, today's testimony unpacked a lot of, it was kind of like the greatest hits of worst moments of Donald Trump's 2016 campaign, the Access Hollywood tape. He won in 2016. I guess one of the questions is, do people care? By people, I don't mean the base, the Republican base, the people who vote in primaries, but a general electorate heading into November.
I don't think so, Phil. I mean, I think most people look at Donald Trump and they're not surprised by the Access Hollywood tape in 2016, and they're not surprised by the salaciousness of this particular case. It's almost expected. Donald Trump never portrayed himself as this great moral arbiter, if you will, or this great spiritual person. It's just not who he is. And the reality is that as a strategist, when I think about why people aren't concerned about this, I'm not thinking about, Phil, what they're telling pollsters in terms of, oh, I'm a good person, I'm a decent person. I'm thinking about what are the things that they aren't saying. And I want to kind of look at their background. I want to look at their research. In preparing for this, I went and took a look at the top websites viewed in the country. Two of the most top sites in the country, Phil, are rather salacious, if you will. And so the point that I'm trying to make here is that there are a lot of Americans who will look at this and will say, well, you know, he's a guy, it doesn't matter. Just like when the Access Hollywood tape came out, a lot of people say, well, that's just the way men talk. And I do believe there's a significant percent of Americans, not just Republicans, who believe that and they will dismiss it.
Yeah, Ashley, you know, to that point, I may dispute the idea that that's just how some men talk. For sure, Schmarker wasn't saying that's the case. He's saying that's what some people think, but I certainly feel the sense or get the sense when you talk to people, it's baked in, right? They know. They were there 7 years ago, 8 years ago. We've kind of gotten past that. As a Democrat, how does the Biden campaign counter that at this point?
Well, you know, when the Access Hollywood tapes came out, I thought it should have been
terminal to his campaign. It clearly was not. He was elected president. But there has been so much that has happened since then that I do think some voters may look at the Access Hollywood tapes, plus the January 6th case, plus the classified documents case, plus January 6th just in general, and his administration over the 4 years, and say, this is too much and we don't want that. So it's not just this case that will be a deciding factor, but it's still totality. The one thing about today's testimony, though, that is like kind of a sigh of relief almost, as someone who was looking at the 2016 election and saying, how can people not care, is that when you talk about grabbing some woman by their private parts, you know that's wrong, even if that's just how men talk. And when you are busted and caught on tape, and it should have tanked your campaign. And the fact was, today we know they knew it was wrong too. For so long in the Trump era and the Trump world, it pretended like that's just how men talk. No, they knew it was wrong. And now they are Hope Hicks had to admit on the stand today that it was wrong. And I think that is an important shift for the American people to know. It's not just the way men talk. It's wrong and it shouldn't be accepted. And it definitely should not be accepted for a president.
Kristen, I know it feels like you're a legal reporter on some level these days, but you are, in fact, leading our campaign coverage of the former president's campaign team. He's actually going to be doing campaign-related things over the course of this weekend. He's got a big fundraiser in Palm Beach, Florida. He's going to be joined by several potential vice presidential picks. What's your sense in talking to folks? I know they're trying to knock everything down. Where does that stand right now?
Look, they're still trying to figure out exactly who's on the short list. I think Donald Trump himself doesn't really know exactly who's up and who's down because it changes every single day. We know that there have been times when Doug Burgum has been coming out of his mouth nonstop. Same with J.D. Vance, both of whom will be there this weekend. These candidates just have to spend enough time around him and around his inner circle to make sure they're still getting the favorability around his inner circle and in his ear in order to possibly be a pick for vice president.
All right, we'll definitely be watching that, and we'll be back here again on Monday. Markle, Ashley, Kristen Holmes, thank you guys very much. Now, the other major news today, a congressman and his wife indicted, where they're accused of taking more than $500,000 in bribes from. That's next.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, host of the Chasing Life podcast. In honor of our 10th season, we want to hear from you. Leave us a message at 470-396-0832 and tell us how you chase life. It could be used on an upcoming episode.